Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Well-Rounded Wealth Podcast. We are on episode number 27, and today we're going to be diving into some learning lessons from, honestly, a curiosity into the things we're learning about. And what predicated this episode was Jack and I, we have been starting to love to read. Read about 2 or 3 books a month, and Jack's diving into his acting books. And it is fascinating to us to see when you start reading something you really enjoy and you start educating yourself on things that you're truly passionate about, the transference of knowledge and what you actually digest from that learning. So that's what we're diving into today. Jack, how are we doing?
We're good. Yeah, you said that very well. So I texted Patrick, I believe it was yesterday, about this acting book that I've been reading, and also Andrew Reimer. We're in a small group chat together ever since he came on an episode. And I was like, oh my God, like, I'm so into this book. And a big realization I had is that there are so many times in my past, whether it's high school or college courses, where the teachers tell us to read a textbook, read this amount of pages by this amount of day. And I don't know about you, Pat, or the people listening. I didn't do that once in my entire life.
Spark notes or Quizlet action?
Anything like that. A couple literature books I read. And by couple, I mean couple.
Two.
I read The Great Gatsby. I actually really liked that book. I read the Lord of the Flies. I actually read that one. Hmm. Dude, we're already like reaching the limit of the books I actually read in high school. I can't think of any more I actually read.
I read a poem.
Oh, I read the poems. That's right. Because those were short and easy. But yeah, just anything textbook related. Sometimes teachers, and we all hated it, forced us to take notes on the readings. And I would literally, for my notes, because it was just grinded out, I would write the heading and then just find 2 sentences within the paragraph of the heading and just copy those down to my notebook and do it as fast as humanly possible. A big reason for this was just the limit of time, you know, like our schedules were always so busy. It was hard to actually just have the time to really break this down. But also it was just really generated from a lack of interest, at least on my end. I didn't care. And then I've started reading this book called The Chubbuck Technique, which is an acting book for my acting class that is all about this technique. And I have been obsessed with this book. We're supposed to have up to chapter 7 done by next week. I'm almost on chapter 10. I'm getting ahead of myself, and I'm actually annotating the book. I'm actually like highlighting and what's it, the basic yellow of like all the good advice. And then in my pink highlighter, it's like all of her advice on what not to do. And I'm like, oh my God, I've never behaved like this with a book before ever in my life. Yeah. And I was like, if I was incorporating this level of effort into any of my past classes, I think I would have gotten A's in every single one of my classes for sure. So it kind of had a realization. I had one just, oh, okay, I found what I really am passionate about. Because now that there's a drive behind it, besides you have to do it or you have to get an A or yada, 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 I'm like, oh, I'm waking up excited to read this book. I'm trying to find time throughout the day to read this book. I have a flight tonight and I am so excited for the flight because I know I'll just get to sit and read the book and we'll have nothing else to do. I'm legitimately looking forward to it. So one, it was just kind of reinforcing that I have found what I really want to do. But also two, it's like maybe I could carry this passion into other things, or if there are things that I have to do, maybe I should find a passion behind it and do the work, because it also is just encouraging me to that no matter what it is, you take something like acting, which almost sounds like something maybe like on a basic level for people who don't really do it or know it, it may not sound that hard. I mean, for some people it does come naturally, but it might sound like it doesn't take a lot of work besides memorizing the lines. And this book is also making me realize how much work goes into actually creating an emotional performance. So, and I think that's really cool because you always hear the advice of you got to do the work. This actor did the work. And my idea of the work before kind of actually reading into craft and technique was just, one, memorize the lines and be prepared in that level, which is a basic level, and then just add some emotion to the performance. And I always would do that, but I never had a specific technique to do that. And it's just kind of, you just kind of like go for it in a way. But now there's actually steps and steps and steps that are telling me, here's the work you need to put in. It's teaching me about script analysis. It's teaching me about how to actually draw from my emotions. And what's really cool about this book, and we can actually get into what some of these steps are, if that's something that intrigues you, Patrick.
Yeah. The one question I had before we dive into the book, because I definitely want to dive into what you're learning, is you said that you might be able to use something you've learned from either the book or just the experience of diving into something you're passionate in reading about into other fields. Do you think finding the passion comes before the actual work you put into it?
I don't know if there's a definitive answer to that. You know, I'll say this for me. I mean, I probably said it since the first episode and kind of hidden ways. Like, I actually really love acting. Like, if you really listen to our podcast, I'm sure I've like secretly kind of said that, but until recently, I've really actually kind of brought that to the forefront of my own psyche and my mindset. So the passion's always been there. And maybe the passion's first. I don't know. You need a taste of something. And I kind of also had a realization once it really did come to the forefront. I was like, I'm not doing this so I don't have to work hard. I'm doing this because everything that you want takes hard work. But I'm like, okay, this is hard work that I want to do. So maybe the passion comes first. At least it did for me. But I think maybe other people work hard first and realize how much they like something. Because you also can't really know if you're passionate about something until you try it and work at it.
Yeah, like maybe the curiosity comes first. And then it leads into more discovery.
Yeah. Well, also some people for their college courses, and I definitely had this with my audio class, which I definitely had a passion for and was what inspired me to want to do a podcast in the first place. That kind of was, it came, the passion wasn't there. I kind of liked sound. I thought sound was cool, but it wasn't until I started learning about it that I thought it was cool. And then I thought it was neat. And then, so yeah, the passion came after learning. The passion came after the exposure, I guess I should say. I didn't think I'd be all that into it, but I ended up being passionate about it. And then once you're passionate about something, then it's like, okay, well, what goes into making a podcast? And that was kind of where that's where the work came in, was kind of that motivation to learn, like from our end on the other side of this, like, okay, how do we get a podcast out there? An RSS feed? What the hell is an RSS feed? Well, let's find out what that is. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So that's where we post it to, and that's how it gets on all these audio platforms. Okay. Interesting. Marketing, Instagram stuff, which, I mean, I'll admit I think both of our passions aren't super high for that side of it, but because we love the podcast, we took an interest in it. So I guess in that example to the passion, the work followed the passion. I don't know. What do you think? What's your perspective on this?
I think it's discovery first. So you have to know it exists. You have to find it intriguing. You have to know it exists, and then you can kind of go two routes. You have to find it intriguing, so you dive into it. Like acting, I think, is a perfect example, because in traditional school, it's not like, oh, I had to take acting class.
Mm-hmm.
On the contrary, you could start getting into, say you're a history buff. I still think there is some inclination of, even if you're required to take a class, say history, there was some inclination when you were growing up before taking this history class that gave you a predisposition to like history or just facts in general. So I think there is always some type of discovery that leads that, I guess, kind of dive into a passion. So, but let's get into the book. So,
okay,
what is the book? What's the main theme of the book? And when were you like, oh shit, this shit is awesome. Like, I can't put this down.
Yeah. So the name of the book is The Chubbuck Technique, which was started by a woman named Ivana Chubbuck. And she is a famous acting teacher. Well, at least in the acting world, a famous acting teacher. Some of her, I guess, clients or students. Some of her students is Halle Berry, who she privately coached in the film Monsters Ball, where she won her Lead Actress Academy Award. Brad Pitt met her when he was working three jobs before he had an agent, before he had ever acted in his life. Matthew Perry, which I just read about, because she kind of starts implementing how this this technique also very much applies to comedic performances. I'm trying to think who else was a really big one. Elizabeth Shue, who's bigger in the 80s, 90s. A lot of very successful names that you've heard of have sought her out and wanted to work with her. And I was very intrigued. So the studio that I take classes at was offering a course just on this technique. So I decided to sign up for it because all I knew about the technique without ever reading about it or anything was just that it is a process that helps you get in touch with your emotions and really brings a lot of emotions to your performance. And I never had a track or an understanding that there's actual steps you can take to get there. So that was why I wanted to do it. A lot of the stuff I've been learning is self-tape practice, a lot of technical things, a lot of marks, a lot of hitting your beats, which is really important stuff as well. And this class kind of offered just a more introspective, emotional deep dive into your performance and that technicality of acting, which is extremely important, but I think so many facets are important. Anyways, getting into it, I was a little nervous about it because the first class, it was very clear to me that we have to examine our past, examine our traumas, and relive that pain. And to a lot of people, that might sound like, why would I do that? And I was kind of the same way. I was like, but why? Like, I don't have a crazy traumatic past, but I definitely do have some trauma. And I don't know. I like being happy. And my idea of being happy is not dwelling on traumatic experiences that have happened in my life all the time. So I had a little trepidation, and maybe fear is even a good word. Because I was like, okay, well, what's the point? Is this just going to, maybe it'll make me a great actor, but will it just completely make me depressed all the time? Will it make me wallowing? So I was like, I don't know. I need to do some investigation. And I told my roommate that after the first class, because I bought the book on Amazon. It came in the next day. I was like, I need to figure out what the goal here is and what it's all about. Literally the introduction. It was about, this is about finding your personal power and finding your personal strength. And she basically said, what I do with my students is have them revisit their traumas and their pain, relive that pain. But also the most important part of the process is that we push forward and we overcome, and that we become powerful, we become enlightened in spite of our past and in spite of our pain. So in a way, I was like, this is almost like a self-help book. And this is almost not only going to benefit my performance, but benefit my own life. So literally in the introduction, I was like, okay, so there actually is a goal here. There is a forward motion here that doing this process will incorporate. So once I had that realization, I was like, all right, let's read. And literally, it is all about, she says, your characters must be winners or trying to win. All characters, step one of this technique, there's 12 steps. We don't have to get into all of them. But literally step one is, once whatever your material is, read the whole thing and then figure out, dive into your character, but most importantly, figure out this character's overall objective. And it does not need to be a complex overall objective. It needs to start as a basic human need. So to be accepted, or to be loved, or to get my power back, or to succeed if it's a defined work environment, to succeed, to become more powerful, a lot of it is about to be loved seems like a very common one. And I think it's, at the end of the day, I think a lot of human beings have that overall objective. But it's just, it's really basic. It's extreme, or survive, you know, like if, what's that, Castaway with Tom Hanks, that character's overall objective is to survive. And that was, so once you figure out that what the character's core is, then you break down every scene and find scene objectives, and that the scene objective is always in relation to the other person in the scene. And even if there's multiple people, there's always one person that you have a scene objective with. And that needs to be in response to your character's overall objective. It needs to support the overall objective. But for example, if your overall objective is to feel accepted, and you have a scene with maybe a parent who you never felt love from, your scene objective would be to make you love me, because that supports your overall objective to feel accepted. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I find that so fascinating, the ability to tap back in to past experiences and then transfer that memory out into a different character.
Like, yeah,
that is that. I definitely can't do that right now. I mean, it is a skill that you see why these actors get paid so much. And it's really cool. And I like the theme of it is using what you have to better yourself as an actor. And honestly, I think to your point, like as a person, this is kind of what that book sounds like, because you can use it. I'll relate this to entrepreneurship. It's use what you have in order to fuel yourself to go to the next stage. And that's what this sounds like. Use what experiences you have, trauma, enjoyment, love, whatever it is, but transfer them into your character to your point, make you more powerful in that moment.
Yeah. So honestly, those first two steps, it's not even quite there yet, because it's essentially the character you're creating, what their objectives and scene objectives are. So you haven't even really brought in your past experiences yet. That comes in. However, you do always want to try to relate yourself to times where you have understood your character's overall objective and scene objective. The 3 and 4 are kind of intertwined, but substitution is one of the next steps. It's technically the fourth step. And that is where you take whatever the character that your character is interacting with. And a lot of people, there's been some trepidation, because it can be dangerous to do, because especially if things are extremely unresolved or it was extremely traumatic, sometimes it's dangerous to do this. But it's actually bring someone, substitute the character with someone from your own life, and that you have wanted to get that scene objective from.
That could be interesting.
Yeah. And it's definitely that. And that's where it gets a little scary, at least in my mind. But however, we did an exercise of substitution in our second class, which just happened on Tuesday. And it definitely got me pretty emotional. I talked to my scene partner. It wasn't a scene that we did, but it was, you pick, and it said this in the book to do this for substitution too, but it said, find a facial feature, no matter what it is, or it could even not even be a physical feature, but just their physicality. Find something that reminds you of that person and just let it transform into them. And I was able to do that for this person, and it became someone from my past. And it was literally talk to this person about things you've always wanted to say to them, but never got the chance to. And it was like, just keep going until you're done. I got pretty emotional. I wasn't like bawling my eyes out, but wow, I really felt like I was talking to this person. It was pretty crazy. And to see other people do it, some people lost it because it was just so painful for them. It was crazy. It was insane.
I mean, I can imagine. I'm kind of painting a picture in my head of what it looks like, and like what if I were in your shoes or I were doing this exercise, what it would be like. And I mean, I'm sure I know off the top of my head of a person that that were I to emulate talking to them. Yeah, that would bring back some strong emotions, and I'm sure you could, in the method of acting it, I'm sure you could lose yourself, or even if it's for a second, and you kind of lose that, oh, I'm still acting. But it's in the back of your head, which to an extent, even though it is dangerous and even though like you can see the power in it, I think from my outside perspective, I think that is probably a method that actors use to convey a scene better than another actor, is kind of losing themselves for a little bit so that they're 100% immersed in the scene or the sub scene.
Right. And a common criticism of that could be, well, then you're not really playing the character. You're just playing yourself because you're replacing it with your own life. If that was the only step, yeah. But because, well, one, so much of this goes into creating your character, and especially if it's someone that's not you, because you have to identify their modus operandi, which is essentially just means their mode of operation, just the way they operate. Also their neurosis, which is more obstacles in the way they operate, like addiction and things like that, that hinder them. And you take all of that and you create those details for the character. You're not just going in there and performing like yourself, talking to someone from your past. You're just using that emotional connection to empathize with the character that you're playing. So it's honestly kind of a small part of it. Because if I just went in there and didn't do any character study or anything and just read the scene, but then just like substituted this character for someone from my own life, then yeah, it would just be me doing that. You know, it would have been raw and authentic, which is why this step is used, is to give some authenticity to your character, some raw emotion to your character, but it doesn't end there. There still needs to be that forward momentum. So it is in pursuit of the story and your goals and all of those things, like the character objective.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, have you ever, learning these techniques and going through this book, what is kind of, I guess, kind of rolling in the back of my mind is, would you ever go out and try and use these techniques in real life? I'm thinking, I guess, a little creatively, like, hey, I'm going to a restaurant and I'm meeting someone I've never met before. I'm like, you know what? I think this type of character would play well into meeting this person.
Well, I think that would get extremely dangerous.
do I have duality?
Yeah, that would. Well, I'll say this, instead of creating an objective for a character that you're playing, maybe create an objective for yourself. So ask, if you're going into a situation, ask yourself, what do I want? Great example is a job interview. Okay, your objective of the interview as yourself is to get the job. So everything you're going to say and do is going to be to get the job. Essentially, that's your goal, right? And so you can come up with ways and techniques to do that, or to at least to attempt to do that and to win and to get your job offer. And that's just what we do naturally. And that's also a part of what this technique, I think, is saying. It's honestly helping us tap into what human beings do naturally. We're competitive creatures and we all have goals. And the reason the overall starts from a basic human need is because that's just how we operate. That's just the way our brains work. So you don't even have to think about it.
Yeah. You connected two points I think are really important with kind of your book and then how we operate as just humans on a day-to-day basis, even in like doing a job interview. Behind every single scenario, there is that one person that you are interacting with. So what was it called in your in the book where it's like that one person in the scene, like you're talking to?
The scene partner. Not a specific name, but there actually is a specific name. Because I was literally, my question when I was reading about the scene objective, I was like, okay, this makes sense when it's a one-on-one scene. The opposite character of me is who I'm interacting with and want something from. But what about a character where there's like five people in the room? And that was pretty interesting because she actually said there's always like an in-your-mind celebrity in the room, or there's always one person you're gravitated towards that you want something from. And she even gave examples that you can relate to in your own life. She's like, if you're at a big event or something like that, or like some sort of big networking event, maybe there's that boss that you've heard of before that you really want to get to talk to and interact with, because he might be able to offer something that you want. Or like, if you're an actor and there's a casting director there that you've heard of, like everything you're going to do, even when you're interacting with other people, is all of a sudden going to be noticed by the casting director, or to have a chance to get to the casting director. Or maybe there's someone that you're very attracted to at an event.
Yeah.
You know, in the back of your mind, it becomes about that one person, which I think is super interesting. Cause when I did look back at times when I've been in places, I'm like, yeah, there kind of always has been that one person. And not to I wouldn't say entirely to a full degree, but it is. And then everyone else becomes your witting allies and unwitting allies. So a witting ally is a character that like understands what you're trying to get and is willing to help you get that. And that's you kind of just have to look at your script and decide who's a witting ally and unwitting ally. An unwitting ally doesn't understand what you're trying to do, and you're almost trying to turn them into allies to help you get what you want without them knowing it.
I think this is awesome because two comments. One, I love breaking stuff down into operationally smaller steps. So I think the scene partner and your allies, let's take a situation like you're at a bar, you're with a group of guys, and you're talking to a group of girls.
Mm-hmm.
My second point is humans are hierarchical in nature. So like there is always this competition, this battle. It's like, oh, even if it's subconscious, like person X is seen in a higher stature than person Y. So take this scene, this situation where you're at a bar. Scene partner wise, you're always going to put, say there's three girls and three guys, you're going to put one of those girls as most attractive. With your group of guys, your two other guys that are with you, say one of them is attracted to the same person and he sees that you're trying to hit on them too. It might be your unwitting partner. And then the other one, like, might be your closest buddy. It's like, oh yeah, Jack's a great dude. Definitely, like, you guys got
right, that. Right. So much, yeah, incredible. Totally.
And going back to your comment on the objective with the job, your objective in this scene might be to, you know, win the girl over.
Yeah, but completely. To get the girl to like me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people will look at that and say, my objective is to get the girl to like me. So your objective becomes the end goal. Or your objective is, I'm trying to word this to where it makes sense. Your objective is the interaction. However, I think if people switched it to the objective being the person, so instead of just like winning the girl over in a romantic way, it's just win the person over.
Okay.
Start focus on the person. I think it's a better example with the job. So oftentimes with the job, you talk about the role of the job, the requirements to be in the job. And yes, that's important. But at the end of the day, who is making the decision? It's the person interviewing you about the job. So if you win the person over on who you are as a person, I think you have a much higher chance, granted you have the qualifications, to get the job.
Okay, I see. I see what you're saying. So you're taking the established objectives and you're thinking of the best strategy to achieve these objectives now, is where you're at. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is great. I love that. And that's definitely how we do life, even without even realizing it.
Yep.
But that's so true. A lot of people, I think that's great advice for anyone interviewing for a job. Advice that's good advice for me as well is, you know, what would make me pick someone if I was in their position?
Yeah. Cause I think we can do that in so many situations, and I can think of a few times where it's been applicable in my life, but I think the deepest connections I've had with people is when I focus on the person and who they are and what they're about and what they're passionate about. Not the end goal of what both people are trying to maybe discern or get out of a situation. And I think on the book topic, where we're on the topic of learning how to win friends and influence people, great book on this. And it sounds like this acting book is too. I got to read it. It's fascinating me just talking about it. So
sweet. I love it. This, we got through like chapter 3.
All right. The other 7 chapters you've read. Let's go.
Oh my God. Well, so we kind of skipped step 3. I mean, in the order of you do it, 3 and 4 are somewhat interchangeable, but 3 is create obstacles for your character, or identify obstacles for your character. Let's take a scene objective that we've established, like to get you to like me, like, or the girl. Okay, what are some objectives? Well, maybe my character belongs to a certain social class that might make them feel like it's harder to get this girl. Or maybe they have a learning disability. Whatever, that's the script informs you of what the obstacles are. And then you can also come up with some past things of what the obstacles could be. And the reason that obstacles are important is because the harder an objective is to obtain, the more interesting and exciting it is for a viewer, because that establishes immediate conflict. When the odds are more stacked against you, but you're still trying to obtain that objective, now you're enthralled as a viewer.
Dude, I'm going to look at people so differently. Yeah, I'm going to try and like start, and, oh, like, what is this guy's objective? And
which I feel like might be dangerous to do when we're just out and about.
it definitely, I mean, granted, I think your mind works a little bit like this, but my mind is definitely like this. I'm like psychoanalyzing every situation. My brain's always firing.
Oh my God. But totally, dude. Totally. Yeah. My mind totally works like that. I think that's what attracts me to acting at all, is just this idea of understanding our own psyche and understanding our truths. And then only through understanding ourselves can we really start trying to emphasize and understand the way that other people think and feel. That's what's so exciting about it in general, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I know we've talked about psychology and the way you influence people and interact with others on this podcast a lot too. So I think there's a lot of associating books that mirror or expand on some of these techniques, which that'd be really cool to dive into. So what is,
yeah.
I know we might not have time to go into all, what is it, 12 steps?
But just briefly go through them.
Well, I would say what is the most impactful lesson that you've learned for translating the emotions you tap into a performance, and then maybe just general life on how you interact with others?
Okay, cool. I would love to give a better update on the first part of that question when I legitimately finish this book and get to practice this technique, because I'm not there yet. I'm getting there in the book. I have a flight tonight. I'm going to try to finish it. But I'm taking my time because I'm really going in and annotating it, because I want to really take it in and understand it instead of just, you know, fly through it. And then I'll be like, yeah, I've read it, but I don't remember shit, which happens to me all the time.
We did that in high school.
Yeah. I'm not ready to answer that question yet. Not truthfully. I'd only be theorizing at this point how impactful things would or wouldn't be. So once I actually practice this technique in full and do a performance, I would love to answer that question. And life too, the way that I've so far, like maybe in my personal life, what I would want to use for this one, I do think this influences self-love, and it does influence, it's a true believer of the idea that no matter who you are or what damage you have had in your life, you can still overcome that. You can still achieve your objectives in spite of the pain that you've experienced and push forward. This whole book is about your characters being dynamic, but having a forward motion dynamic, that you are after something, you are pushing towards something, you are not giving up. Now, there's times when the character may be giving up in the script, but then, which is like, you know, a lowest moment point in any hero's journey or anything like that, but they still... Mm. They still push forward. I mean, sometimes movies have endings or shows have endings where the character gives up. Sometimes there's moments where the character dies and it might not be a big sacrifice death to save the day or redemption death, but you as an actor can still work to push towards a death, even if it's giving in to your into your most inner demons or lust and desires, you're still, even if it's an evil intention, you can still give in and push for evil intention as that character. And when you're playing it, not to judge a character's evil intentions, but also remembering your own personal values as you away from that character too, but to not judge it when you're playing it, and to like let all that go when you're playing the character.
This is so technical. I love it.
I know. Yeah, that was, well, another thing that intrigued me, because it was, they talked about Anthony Hopkins in the book playing Hannibal Lecter, who's a murderer who eats people, you know, which objectively, both societally and in my own values, I think that's morally wrong to do that, to murder and eat people. However, when Anthony Hopkins discussed that he never judged the character as Anthony Hopkins, him as himself, he doesn't think that it's okay to murder and eat people. But when he's diving into the character, he's not saying, I'm judging this person for doing this. I want to understand what brought this person to this point and what are his objectives and why does he do what he does. And then in this process, he's like, I understand why he does what he does. And his overall objective in that film was to get a friend in Jodie Foster's character, which I thought was really interesting. And that influenced a lot of how he played it, because a lot of it was him testing her to see if she can relate to his inner pain.
So a lot of this in what you're talking about, I'm kind of maybe putting together a common theme where it's dissociating yourself and your actions in that moment from what either the moment requires or what the scene requires and what your scene partner requires or who the person you're acting with or you're interacting with requires. Like, situationally, be aware of who you are and what is required of you in any given time. And I think that it's like being able to look down on yourself from a third party like perspective. Like, you know, the movies where it's a spirit
out of body,
out of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Out of body experience.
That's like a Doctor Strange soul that gets hit out. Oh my God.
That's what I feel like this is like. And it's doing that. And we talked about in one of the episodes, it's the association and dissociation with where you're at. We talked about that in terms of fitness, but I think this applies to acting too. And interactions with other humans. It's like, associate with when you're listening, but dissociate when you need to say something in a certain way in order to convey your message to someone else.
Yeah. I don't know if you're ever fully, from a judgment perspective, you're dissociating, but I think when you're playing a character and you understand the objectives, like even in that substitution, it doesn't need to be like, who's someone I want to kill or who's someone I want to eat or why wouldn't I want to eat someone? If you can play it as I want to feel understood by another person, everyone's felt that way, I think. So if you play something with that within the story, that's the part of yourself, that's the part of your empathy that you're bringing into it, then to play a character who, throughout the history that you created for this character, has done certain things, but you're just, at least maybe it's a suspension of your own beliefs and values. That's exactly what it is. You can understand why they do what they do, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I feel like I just repeated myself slightly there, but
yeah, we definitely got technical, so I can see how it might be easy to lose us on some of these, but
I'm interested in how much people are following.
Yeah, it's very granular in terms of how we're describing these interactions, especially I think if you, first and foremost, as an overarching suggestion, in order to act these things out and tap into your emotions, I think you have to have some level of personal development and be able to tap into yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, actually,
that is the most important thing for anyone in any situation, figuring out any point of life. Like, I think that is one of the first lessons we should learn as people.
I agree. Yeah, interestingly, I have been told by my teacher that they don't like to teach this method to younger actors, especially their youth and teen courses, because some of them are not fully emotionally developed or capable of handling their emotions yet. And this would be a very dangerous thing to incorporate into them, especially during their prepubescence, during puberty. It'd be a rough time to have that access. And you don't want it to alter your chemical makeup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. I live on the edge, so I'm like, give this to it. See what he can do.
I'm sure plenty have. Tom Holland actually mentioned that he had a private acting coach who was kind of teaching him similar methods, doing substitution, but like taking your loved ones and imagining like the worst things ever happening to them. And he got there, but it was effing him up. And the acting coach is like, okay, I'm scared about where this is going to take this guy. So they came up with different methods to still get there and hit those emotional beats without like always like imagining like his mother dying in his arms as a 14-year-old kid. I feel like it could be a dangerous game if you're not playing it right or with an overall objective in mind.
Yeah. Well, I know we're getting close to the end of our time.
I know. I can't believe that, actually.
Yeah. We could talk for hours about not even the full book. Anything else from this that you would say has been very impactful that we haven't covered?
Let me think.
Or maybe instead of the actual book, how about the lesson of learning? Because I think
I do have one more thing on the book.
Okay.
Do both. So the final step of this technique, it's step 12, is let it go. And I haven't gotten there yet, but I know that that's the last step. And right now of where I am, and because I was also thinking about this too, I'm like, I don't want to like be performing and just this would be consumed by all of this. And there's even more prep work that we haven't covered that I'm learning in this book. And to be like on set or on stage, always having this in my head, I feel like I don't want to be so detached where like I can't like talk to a crew member and just be a normal human being and just say, hey, how you doing? You know, like I don't want to sacrifice that part of myself. And the let it go, it seems like it wants you to do all of this work in preparation. And then once you're actually performing, let it go. And I was like, so I haven't gotten there yet. So I'd love to honestly do another episode with an update on what else I learned. Because it's scary and probably going to be really hard. It might be the hardest step. I don't know. To let all of this work go. Or it might be the most freeing and maybe the most raw. I don't know. But it's a very interesting last step, and I'm kind of have anticipation towards reading and learning about it and why that is a final step. So that's also what's pushing me to read more as well.
Yeah, I almost think you could think of it like an athlete, you know, like Steph Curry. He might take, he's made like what? He does 15,000 shots a year. I think it's more than that, whatever it is. But he's not going every single shot in a game. He's not like, finger roll. There we go. Swish. He's like dribble, dribble, pop the shot because there's a second left. That's what I feel like this might be like. It's practicing and practicing and practicing and practicing until you just get to a normal stage where it's natural. So it might not necessarily
I think
be,
that's exactly what this is.
Yeah. And that's just speculation, but I think you can do that.
Thank you. I think you're right. I think that's exactly what it is. Because even for a job interview prep, which I did recently, I did all of my research on everything, like who the person was, who the company was, what kind of skills they might be looking for, so I can specifically reference those, have all that ready. I got pretty technical. And then when the interview was coming up, I was like, all right, I need to chill now. I need to relax, because I can't just like go into the interview and just be like, hello, hello. So I have this. This is what I know. Blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? You do have to, I think no matter what it is, you have to let it go when you're prepping. You do have to just kind of You have to trust that the work is there.
Yeah, like studying or athletics or...
Yeah, they say that before you take an SAT. It's some people recommend that the night before, don't study. You've done the work, relax, get in the zone.
It's like let the information perforate throughout you and know that it's there. I think the only downside is when you know you're anxious about not being prepared. That's when you know, like, crap, I should have done more. So
that's so true. That I think that's the goal.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Get yourself to wrap it up. Do the work to the point where you won't be anxious about being unprepared. It's like you've done the work. Trust that you've done the work. Now go.
Let it go. Perform.
Let it go and perform.
Oh, wait. That's Let It Snow. I
don't... No, that's Let It Go. You nailed that. Is it? Yeah, it's Let It Go. Let It Snow is the Christmas song.
Is there two songs? Wait, what's
Let It Go is Frozen.
Yeah. Oh, it is?
It's Let It Go. Yeah, yeah, you sniped that. Okay. You nailed that. Boom, you know your Frozen lore.
No, my Disney stuff. Classic. But yeah, I think that is a great theme for the learning aspect of it.
Beyond the book. Yeah, totally. I guess it is learn to let it go. I honestly, for me, I could see that being the hardest step.
Yeah.
Or maybe the easiest. Sometimes I'm good at...
Those are two very polar opposites.
Might be the hardest or the easiest.
Best of luck to you.
Who knows? That's so funny.
Easy. But yeah, man, this has been a fascinating conversation for me, and I hope other people enjoy it and find something in their life to learn like this. I know we wanted to cover more, but we'll do that on the next episode.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what I've learned from this desire to learn is that now that I have a passion, the idea of learning and doing the work, it just feels like, yes, of course, I must. And I can be very lazy at times, especially when it's stuff I'm not particularly passionate about. So you're like, nah, I don't know. Like, I'll wing it. And I'm kind of, I don't know. That's what I do. I go, meh, I don't know. But I guess I'm learning personally that when it's something I love, I think I got to give it my all here and learn as much as humanly possible about it, because knowledge is power, and just use it to my advantage of wanting to become better and more sound. And what sounds great about what I'm learning is that I might be able to apply it to my own life and better myself as an individual and overcome things as well along the way. So I'm really happy about this pursuit that I'm on. Hopefully things work out.
I love it, man. Just wait till Jack is on FX and Marvel and all these big old studios, guys.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe one day.
Yeah, you
can. That's the dream, right? Should we wrap it? Is that all?
Yeah.
All right.
I think that's a great place to wrap it. So.
All right. Cool. Well, I will definitely update you privately when I finish more of this book. Maybe I can discuss it more once I've actually read everything. And maybe when I've actually, maybe let's, all right. Yeah, let's talk about it in front of people. We could bookend this, maybe come back to it in like maybe a few weeks or so. And then where I've actually practiced this technique and can kind of give a more full circle update.
Yeah. Love it. Let's do it.
So
we'll keep doing these kind of episodes too. I think we've had a few guests on the last few weeks and we want to keep bouncing back and forth between stuff we're learning and stuff other people are learning. So I think this is a good format and structure of some of the stuff that we're processing and how not only the lesson from the stuff we're learning, but how we are approaching learning, because that's the ultimate goal of this is follow us along the journey of learning about ourselves. And we want you guys to learn too, be able to take some of the lessons that we've learned and discuss on here and apply it to your life.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. Hopefully people are able to follow along. This is the most I ever just kind of rambled and wasn't thinking about how easily digestible this stuff could be. And I went very conceptual. Next time I might break down a movie character that everyone's seen and break down the steps in that fashion just so people could follow along better. But yeah, if you like the podcast, as usual, feel free to leave those 5 stars, positive review, follow the podcast wherever you're listening from. We love you guys. Thank you so much. And also feel free to hit us up on our social medias, DM us about anything you might want to hear us discuss or something you want to discuss. We're always open ears. And thank you guys so much. We love you. And we'll see you on the next episode.
Peace.